Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now, as usual on Wednesdays after Mayor Adams' weekly Tuesday news conference, our lead City Hall reporter, Elizabeth Kim. It's only that one time a week when reporters can ask about topics of their choosing, not just the mayor's choosing. And yesterday's session was pretty contentious as these things go, after some leaders of the NYPD used their social media to post derisive comments about members of the media who've dared to be critical of the department. These were largely focused on an article by Daily News columnist Harry Siegel and a tough interview that Mayor Adams got on the nationally syndicated radio show The Breakfast Club from lawyer and activist Oluyemi Oluren. Here's a 30-second excerpt of that.
I didn't put the National Guards in the subway. The governor did.
I know, I know what you said.
But you said, Eric.
You stood with Governor Kathy Hochul and you co-signed that decision. You did. And I'm not saying this as someone who's following social media. I'm saying that as an attorney in the city and an activist who follows everything that you do.
Yeah, I'm glad you do. Because then you realize how I turned the city around if you follow everything I do. You realize
I would say no, but we could get to that next.
Loosen up your time, man. It's gonna be a long day.
All right, a sample from The Breakfast Club there, and that actually went on for quite a while. Elizabeth Kim here. Hi, Liz. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Brian.
Give our listeners more context about that interview. When was that, and what happened there?
The interview was taped last Thursday morning, and this is a show. It's called The Breakfast Club. It's a nationally syndicated show. It has an average of 4 million listeners. And it's very powerful. It's very politically influential. The president, President Biden, has been on this show. So the mayor appeared on the show with the lawyer and activist Oluyemi Oluren. We first learned about it when they tweeted a picture of the two of them together. Now, anyone who knows, who follows New York City politics, knows that Oluyemi Oluren is a fierce critic of the mayor. You just do a Google search of her name and you will see that she has called the mayor the worst mayor in history in America. So there was a lot of surprise when a picture came out that he was going to do the show with her. And sure enough, a lot of people tuned in. This is not a short interview. This was 50 minutes. And the clip you played was just a taste of the kind of sparring that went on between the two of them. The mayor was clearly on the defensive. The interview was actually taped, so you can watch it on YouTube, and you do see the mayor looking quite uncomfortable. Like in the clip you played, you know, the host makes that joke, "Loosen your tie, mayor, it's going to be a long day." And that really set the tone for the rest of the interview. That came about 6 minutes into that interview. So, you know, this became sort of, you know, it kind of, this was the buzz in the political world, because it's not just that we're seeing this person grill the mayor in this way. You know, as you and I have talked about, the mayor has really tried to limit, you know, questions from the media. So here you have 50 minutes of basically this unfiltered sort of opportunity for someone to really be critical of him and press him on a lot of issues. You know, it also put pressure on something that a lot of people have been talking and writing about, which is about public safety and whether the mayor's own rhetoric and his policies on crime, such as supporting the National Guard being deployed into the subways, has fueled the perception that the city is unsafe. That was something that Oluren, from the very beginning, tried to pressure him on.
You reported that Oluren never thought the mayor would actually show up for the interview. So at yesterday's news conference, the mayor was asked, why did he show? Did he know Aliyemi Alurin's politics? And he said this.
And with the Breakfast Club, it doesn't matter to me who's sitting inside a room. It doesn't matter, you know, people don't got to tell me who the hosts are. They don't got to tell me who the guest is going to be. That just doesn't matter to me.
So can you put that in context? And did he know she would be there?
So Olayemi told me that she only learned maybe a few days before her scheduled appearance on The Breakfast Club that the mayor was going to be there. And she told me, like, her reaction was like, no way. There's no way this is happening. And she told me she thought that the producers were pranking her. So I asked the mayor whether he knew because, you know, this show has a lot of clout. And I think a show like this can do something like this. They're very good at creating viral moments. So I think what happened was the mayor didn't know. And I asked him and he didn't answer it directly. But what he said was he said, you know, I don't care who comes on with me. I will debate anyone. Which, you know, I think is the answer he would give. But, you know, I think, you know, listeners might read a bit of bravado into that, too. What Olurin said to me was she didn't think that he would ever go on again with her or do that, you know, in that kind of format again. But, you know, I guess we'll see. The mayor said that, you know, he's not afraid at all. I think towards the end of that clip, he said something, you know, I'll go on with five critics.
Right. Although it is a little surprising. I mean, we know that the mayor doesn't come on this show very often like the previous mayor did. The mayor doesn't go on Inside City Hall with Era Lewis, you know, very different kind of tone that's kept there than on The Breakfast Club. And yet he sat for this. How do you understand his choices?
I think that speaks to the clout of the show, Brian. Like I said, The Breakfast Club, one media expert called it appointment listening for people of color. And the mayor in this moment has done a lot of media in which he's trying to speak to his base. And this is the perfect format for it. And I think that what must have happened was, you know, he was caught by surprise. He probably wasn't expecting her to be on the show with him. But he also couldn't refuse in that moment either. You know, this is sort of too important a moment. It's a great opportunity for the mayor to get out his message. I'll be very interested to see if the mayor does that show again.
So how did anyone in the administration react to the interview afterwards? Did they disparage Alurin?
Well, prior to the mayor appearing, so it was pre-taped. So the mayor's the deputy mayor for communications, he put out a social media post in which he acknowledged that the mayor was going on with her. And he said that, you know, this is just a reflection of how the mayor wants to engage with all different New Yorkers of all different kinds of opinions. So they tried to spin it in that way. But afterwards, you know, there were allies of the mayor, in particular the NYPD, that came out and they criticized Olurin on social media. I think one of the NYPD top brass disparagingly referred to as a, quote, woke activist. But, you know, it was clear. There was Olurin put out a social media post where she put out a clip that garnered over 3 million views. People are still watching these clips.
Now we get to the other media person in their social media crosshairs at City Hall, Daily News columnist Harry Siegel. What did he do?
So this is Harry Siegel, who has been a guest on this show, and he wrote a column that was critical of policing. And then over the weekend, what happened was, with several members of the NYPD's top brass, took to the social media platform X to criticize him. Now, this is part of the NYPD's own self-professed strategy of trying to reshape the narrative around crime and push back on what they see as inaccurate coverage. Now, I will say that as a reporter, it's not uncommon for city officials to try to criticize what they think is unfair coverage. The mayor's office, for example, will do it quite frequently. They will do it with phone calls. And increasingly, they do take their complaints to social media, and it can sometimes get a little nasty. What I will point out, though, in this situation, this is not just any city agency that is going out of its way to call out and attack a reporter by name. This is the NYPD. This is the largest police force in the country. It's not a flack from the mayor's office or the Department of Education. You know, these are high-ranking brass in the police department, and they made very personal but also inflammatory attacks against Harry. And I just, you know, I will just read one of the tweets that came from John Schell. He's the chief of patrol. Mm-hmm. He writes, "The defund crowd will cry boo-hoo to 911 when they need us. The problem is that besides your flawed reporting is the fact that we are calling you and your, quote, latte friends out on their garbage. Well, get your popcorn ready. We have a strong platform, too." So that is the kind of tone that was fired at Harry. And this was amplified because a tweet like this was then retweeted, resocialed by other members of the police department. The police department's own official account came out with, you know, a very disparaging moniker for Harry, calling him, you know, deceitful Harry.
Deceitful, like it was almost like a Trump name. Deceitful Siegel, right? Picking up on the IE sound. Deceitful Siegel.
Right. So on the one hand, you could call this is it's very childish. It seems almost like bullying. You know, I think Errol Lewis got on social media too to say that this was really beneath them, and then he got into it too with one of the members of the NYPD. So this happened, you know, I think it might have started Saturday, but it certainly through Sunday. We all saw these tweets sort of pinging back and forth on the internet.
And so at the news conference yesterday, the mayor was asked if he thought these kinds of social media attacks were appropriate, and he said this.
"And I don't think they attacked anyone. They responded. The columnist shared his opinion. They shared their opinion. I think the police department, the criminal justice system, elected officials, I think all of us must be held accountable for our actions, all of us. I'm a big believer in the free press. I don't agree with everything I see in the press, but I believe in the free press. But the free press should be held accountable, too. I don't know why we feel the free press should not be held accountable."
So some responses by Harry Siegel. He has reacted that, they picked out one factual error that he made and hammered him on that. He corrected the factual error once he realized that it was a factual error. But he says they sidestepped the main argument of his column, which is that police are not dealing effectively with the subways. They're flooding the zone with more police officers, but they're not being effective. And so that was one of Harry Siegel's pushbacks, right? That they didn't address the underlying issue about the effectiveness of the NYPD. Was the mayor asked about that yesterday?
Well, I put a question to the mayor that I've been thinking about for a long time that I think speaks to Harry's criticism. What I wanted to know was, we do see all of this police presence, right, on the subways now. No one can deny that. When it comes to what New Yorkers are seeing and feeling, a lot of listeners on your show have called to say that some of those things are seeing vulnerable people who appear to need help but are not getting it. So what I put to the mayor was...
And hang on, I'm going to jump in here because we have the clip.
Okay.
So here is about a minute of Liz Kim's question to the mayor at his weekly news conference yesterday and the mayor's response.
What is the directive that NYPD who are working in the subways are given when they come across a homeless individual or someone who looks like they might be in distress? I know that when you talked about your mental health plan, you talked about giving them some training to start engaging. And I take the subways every day. I haven't seen that. I do see the NYPD there, but I don't see them having conversations with homeless people. Like sometimes they'll ask them to get up because they're taking a space on the subway and they said it's rush hour, you need to leave. But I don't really see them saying, like starting that conversation, do you need help? Do you need a place to stay? Are you hungry? And I'm wondering if that kind of protocol is being given to them.
So that was the question. And here is, and you'll tell me if this is Mayor Adams' response to your question right there, or if this is something he said that was related at another time. Here we go.
I saw that yesterday, that if the person was had no shoes on, or they were sitting down, clearly they needed help. The officers were not willing to engage. And we need to sit down with Deputy Mayor Williams Isams and her team and Brian and others. We need to figure out how do we tweak that more, because I would like to see the officers get more engaged just in that initial contact.
So that sounded responsive to your question and kind of acknowledging that your premise was true.
Right. And I was a little surprised, Brian, because when the mayor first rolled out a plan where he wanted police to forcibly remove people who appear to be mentally ill, for example. And he gave an example of someone who's talking to themselves or someone who doesn't have shoes. He, at the time, said that he was going to give police the training they needed to do it. And what he told me yesterday was he actually went out on Monday night, I believe, with the NYPD. And what he told me was, you're right, they're not doing it. And he said that a lot of police officers are uncomfortable with doing that. He also talked about how in the past, there was an effort to do this. They had outreach teams. And I think he's referring to in 2019, I went back into the clips to look this up, Mayor de Blasio had announced this massive multi-agency effort. It was $140 million, and it involved 18,000 city employees, not police, but it was involved city employees who would file 311 reports for people that they saw living on the streets or in the subway system. And the response was, I believe, mostly by the FDNY, like EMTs. Now, this program was ultimately, I think it was ultimately disbanded. That's what the mayor said yesterday. And I think what happened was, 2019 and then the pandemic hit in 2020. So I believe it might have been a casualty of that. But, that's something that is kind of one of the critiques, right? We've mobilized this huge city resource in the form of police. Now, you might argue that they are not the appropriate people or city employees who should be responding to what is, in fact, a mental health crisis, a homelessness crisis. But it is fair to ask, how should we be using then this sizable resource? And what they're doing right now is they're there to respond when there's an incident, and they're there also to act as a deterrent. The question is, should they be doing some preventative work? And that would be the role of, as I posed to the mayor, of starting to ask people some questions. Do you need help? Do you need a place to stay? Are you hungry? I think that might start to start to have policymakers start thinking about, you know, something the mayor talks about so often, right? Going upstream rather than downstream. I will say that even de Blasio's program was criticized by homeless advocates because they didn't feel that it fundamentally did affect the root causes of homelessness, which is housing and also an unsafe shelter system. So, but I think that is part of the conversation that maybe the mayor is starting to think about, as he said in those remarks yesterday.
Few minutes left with our lead Eric Adams reporter, Elizabeth Kim, who was at yesterday's weekly news conference by the mayor. We've been playing clips and getting her analysis. Let me get a couple of calls in here before we run out of time. 212-433-WNYC. Here's Kanani in Harlem, I think reacting to the tough interview of the mayor on the Breakfast Club radio show that we played the clip of. Canadian, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much. Yeah, and thank you for the for your reporter asking those tough questions of the mayor. I'll say that. I think Adams did not answer that actual question. I think that he, you know, is very pompous and dismissive and arrogant and enamored with his own grandeur of started from the projects and now I'm mayor. And so, and that's a reference to started from the bottom, now we're here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, he didn't know who she was. He, you know, because he thinks he doesn't, he said so. He was like, it doesn't matter who, you know, I talk, you know, which is again in the same school of this free speech movement that's starting to poison social media, by the way. This, I can talk to anybody, you know, Joe Rogan, Elon Musk, they're all in this wave of, you know, screw politics, you know, that's what's wrong. And, you know, so if you listen to Eric, he does toe that line a lot. And he used to be a Republican, by the way, not to disparage all Republicans, but you hear this level of, I'm above that fray. I don't need to know what side of the, you know, the argument you're on. I'm mature enough to have a conversation. And so that met with staunch resistance by an audience that he obviously thinks that he is simpatico with, right? So again, the Breakfast Club audience is younger, they're hip hop, and here comes, you know, Mayor Adams thinking he's the quote unquote hip hop mayor, right? And, you know, he thinks that he can do what I see him do all the time when I'm at events and he talks. He says the same thing. I started from the projects. And so he thinks that started from the projects is going to eclipse his policies. Mm-hmm. And so what he met at the Breakfast Club is, no, your policies stink, Mayor. Right.
And there's diversity in the community, right? So, Kanani, thanks for dropping a Drake lyric on us, among everything else that you said.
Very good. And
Liz, I mean, that is his base. Kanani got that right. I guess a question is how much political diversity is there among that base that he tries to reach on shows like the Breakfast Club? I don't expect you to be able to, like, be a pollster right now and say exactly how much. But I wonder how he also feel about being lumped in with Elon Musk and Joe Rogan there.
Right. And the show does have some right-leaning guests often. And, to the caller's point, I think what was powerful about that moment was here you had a guest on the show, a fellow guest on the show with the mayor, who was putting out acknowledging the real concerns among Black and Brown New Yorkers about how policing can be racist and how it is applied unequally. And she cites, you know, a real report. She cites real data to the mayor. But on the other hand, there is this other feeling in the community that they have not been protected enough, that they have been underserved by the police. So I think that is that was inherently the tension there, but this is also, in many ways, the perfect forum in which the mayor to have this conversation, to acknowledge that duality and give a policy response to it.
One more call. John in Rockville Center, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, Brian. How are you? As you know, I was in the police department for 34 years. My wife, recently retired, was as an inspector. She was in charge of the Homeless Outreach and Shelter Security Section. It was a unit that had over 400 people in it, and altogether, you know, supervising the shelters as well, probably about 1,000. And she started a strategy, and this was in cooperation with the Department of Social Services, where the police officers would go out with nurses, and the nurses were trained in the mental hygiene law. You know, for, I think it's 359 in the mental hygiene law, where you can forcibly remove somebody to be evaluated.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 593, I forget the numbers. But they went out in teams, and they would actually, you know, if the person wasn't under eligible under the mental hygiene law, you know, just talk to them. And they were highly successful in getting people to get into the shelters, and they had a transportation system. They got them in, or they, if the nurse determined that, yeah, they met the criteria, they'd be forcibly removed. If they didn't, a lot of times they were able to get them to cooperate and be evaluated. The program was really successful. They were also removing encampments as well. And then, unfortunately, you know, right after the George Floyd demonstrations, you know, when like 10 of their vans were burned during those demonstrations, Mayor de Blasio just disbanded the unit, you know, because of the backlash that was going on. He just did away with the unit, and a highly successful program was just totally deleted.
John, I'm going to leave it there. Liz, I don't know if you're familiar with that or fact check any of that narrative, but it's the kind of thing, if John remembers that correctly, that really you were asking about, that's implied by your question, and by the mayor's answer to your question, really, that if the police officers don't feel comfortable in many cases engaging the people who they would like to help as well as get out of the subway system, that there are programs that have existed in the past, or there's training that needs to take place that they haven't engaged yet.
That's right, Brian. So, yeah, that's an example. And the mayor, I believe himself, referenced that. Now, there was a stick for that, for homeless people to, you know, accept room at a shelter or accept services. And what that stick was that in order to avoid a summons, they needed to agree to accept services. And that actually drove some of the critique of the program from homeless advocates, was they didn't like this idea that police were basically threatening to issue a summons to a homeless individual who might be lying on a bench, and, you know, they could have been ticketed for some, you know, obstructing, you know, some, you know, on a public space, things like that. They didn't quite like that kind of approach. And I think, you know, there'll always be some kind of criticisms. But the idea is, yes, this is not a new idea. This of how do we get the right people, maybe with the right training, to do this kind of work that would help maybe prevent the kinds of what, you know, the mayor says, some random acts of violence that we've been seeing, especially in the wake of the pandemic and the mental health crisis.
Elizabeth Kim covers City Hall for WNYC and Gothamist, including the mayor's weekly Tuesday news conference. And she usually comes on with us on Wednesday mornings after that with clips and analysis and to take your calls like we just did today. Liz, thanks as always.
Thanks, Brian.